Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hoban Minute. This is your host, Xavier, and I'm joined today in the booth, as I am always, by Bob. How are you today, Bob?
Hey now, I'm doing great. Happy New Year to you, by the way.
This is our first 2024 episode, I believe.
2024 is here.
It's exciting, and I'm excited to kick the year off with an important topic, I think, that has gripped certainly the cannabis industry on LinkedIn over the last few months, but I think, you know, the cannabis industry at large over the last 6 months, and that is THCA flower. Of course, when we say THCA flower, we do refer to what might be called hemp-derived THCA flower, or hemp-sourced, right? It's coming from originally a hemp plant. But yeah, I thought it'd be a good time for you and I to get into the nitty-gritty and the nuances of THCA flower, kind of overview of the legality, or, you know, maybe the interpretation of the law that has created the THCA market that we see today. But also just kind of provide, you know, our color commentary and analysis on THCA flower specifically, and kind of what its relation is to both the licensed marijuana industry and then, of course, other, you know, intoxicating hemp-derived compounds or products, and then generally how they might interplay with each other. So pretty excited for today's topic. And we've lightly touched this. We've kind of danced around it, I think, for the last few episodes. So I'm excited to really just jump in and focus specifically on this.
So at the outset, though it's important for us to advise our listeners,
yes,
like all of our episodes, that we're talking about topics. None of this is legal advice or something that should be construed as legal advice,
right.
But rather this is us just talking about industry trends and our unique perspectives based thereon. You know, Xavier, the THCA flower issue is yet another one of the gifts that the Farm Bill has given us.
Right.
And when I say gifts, I say that sometimes tongue-in-cheek, because it has caused, as you point out, so much controversy, the hemp versus the marijuana issues, so forth and so on. But let's take this to its baseline. Under federal law, of course, by virtue of the 2014 and subsequently the 2018 Farm Bill, any cannabis plant that's approved to be grown in a state under an approved hemp program is a hemp plant versus a marijuana plant, meaning federally legal hemp versus federally illegal marijuana, based at that 0.3% Delta 9 THC threshold. And that's the important discussion here. The law only talks about Delta 9 THC. And whether you're talking about marijuana or you're talking about hemp, Delta 9 THC levels tend to be fairly low. What's more present in the plants prior to incineration or decarboxylation, whatever process you might describe it as to convert this acid form of THCA, into
tetrahydrocannabinolic acid.
Yep. Well said. To convert it to Delta 9 THC requires the application of heat, exposure to the sun, light, elements,
pressure,
or the like. That converts the THCA into Delta 9 THC. Right? We know that, but I sort of wanted to walk through this slowly so that the listeners can grasp this concept. So if my D9, my Delta 9 THC level is below that 0.3% threshold, it does not matter what the THCA level is unless that particular state in which it's grown or sold has a requirement of something called total THC versus just testing Delta 9 THC. So the law talks about Delta 9 THC. So if it's below the 0.3% threshold, it's hemp. Some states have enacted something called total THC, meaning you add the D9, the Delta 9 THC, to the THCA, but not at a one-to-one application. You only take 88% of the THCA and you add that to the Delta 9. So let's take an example here. You're going to have to help me because I'm not a mathematician. We've got 0.29% Delta 9 THC. All right. Then you have 15%, 15.0% THCA. You would take 88% of that 15%.
That's right.
Make it 10%, then we know it's 8.8, and you add that. So then all of a sudden your percentage is well above the 0.3% threshold if it was a total THC state. So that's an important level set because some states do require total THC analysis. But if I convert that THCA by heating it, smoking it, setting it ablaze, then it turns into Delta 9. So when smoking it, does that turn a hemp flower into a marijuana flower?
That's one of the interesting questions, right? And I think one of the main issues that, you know, I've seen with THCA flower is that, you know, you just spent 5 minutes describing kind of the legal theories, right? That may say, okay, this product is legal because it's under 0.3% Delta 9 THC. But I found that, you know, the issue is that it requires a 5 minute explanation. It requires, you know, kind of this, you know, there's certainly no loopholes, right? People love using the word loophole. There's no loophole someone's jumping through to get to that conclusion, but it requires, you know, a bit of that strained kind of analysis where you're looking at something, you're looking at a few different sets of rules. You're comparing, you know, criminal law, what marijuana is compared to a civil law, what hemp is. And you're kind of having to find the intersection and the interplay of that. Cause you're right. I think at some point the THCA flower, or what we'll call for the purpose of this episode, THCA flower, does become marijuana. And most of the time that's when a user uses it. It's when someone lights it on fire. It's when someone applies pressure to it and converts it into an extract, or, you know, uses a heat and pressure press like a rosin press and creates rosin. And that's when you get the valuable concentrate that does get you high because you're converting that THCA into Delta 9. So I think it's important also to kind of start with a simple concept. And this might be a controversial one, but I think it's the easiest way to look at THCA flower is that THCA flower is the same marijuana flower that you buy in a dispensary. It's just tested using a different methodology, and it comes from a cannabis sativa L plant that once, or at the point of harvest, qualified as hemp, right? At the end of the day, out in the field, in your pocket, rolled up in your joints, THCA flower is the exact same flower that you purchase in a licensed marijuana dispensary in any of the state medical or adult use regulatory systems, right? And so that's an important concept to start with, is that this is marijuana. This is, you know, this is weed. This is the same stuff that you smoke to get high. It's just that it comes from something initially that qualified as hemp. And so that's an interesting kind of, it brings up to me at least the specter of something that you were, you know, involved in, I think, intimately back in maybe 2018. That's kind of the concept of this, the source rule thing, right? That out in the field, yeah, these two, you know, you might have two bags of buds that look exactly the same, but one bag of buds originally was sourced from a hemp farm, and the other bag of buds was originally sourced from a licensed marijuana cultivation, right? And so those are two very different, in the eyes of the law, buds, but to a common consumer, is the exact same product. So does this, is there, are we kind of back into that source rule area where we're now viewing things as, oh, we have to trace every COA, we have to trace every single, you know, the chain of custody from cultivation through processing and packaging and distribution and say, oh, okay, no, we do have, you know, somewhere in that chain, there is a hemp plant that we can say, okay, we can point to that hemp plant and say, that's where this bud came from. Or is it really just, again, what, you know, Shane Pennington or some other cannabis attorneys would say is, well, no, it's actually what the D9 concentration is of that individual item. You know, I think to me, it's like, if we're looking at THCA flower and we're saying that all that matters is that D9 concentration, then there truly is no way to differentiate between marijuana and hemp. So, you know, what is law enforcement? What is, you know, an average consumer to do? How are they going to know that when they go online and buy something that says just THCA flower, that it is THCA flower, that it wasn't originally sourced in an illegal marijuana grow? and that someone somewhere is saying, well, no, now we're going to use this THCA flower thing that seems to be popular, and we're going to say, hey, this is now legal cannabis or hemp. You know, that's one of those kind of one of the early questions, I think, that the THCA issue raises.
Well, and it also just paints the picture of the absurdity.
Oh, it's truly absurd.
The laws.
Thanks to lawyers.
This plan.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to lawyers and politicians and all this years of stigma and prohibition that, you know, that marijuana has to be treated so with such stigma, with such protection. And whereas hemp does not have that stigma. And we've seen that play out in the IHD concept. But, you know, when I think about hemp flower, a few years ago, hemp pre-rolls were certainly prevalent, but in a different way than we're talking about THCA flower today. Those hemp pre-rolls were indeed just regular old hemp. There was not any high level of THCA. What they did, they would capture the trichomes, the cannabinoids, the THC, off of the exterior of the plant, the crystals on the plant, and they would add them back into a mix of what was otherwise just an earthy, outdoor-grown, not particularly tasty, pre-rolled hemp cigarette, which if that hemp didn't have the keef added back in, wouldn't produce anything other than maybe a little bit of a yawn and perhaps a little relaxation. But the idea there was it was not intended to provide an intoxicating or a effect or a high. So the hemp flower concept has moved to the point where so boldly people are out there selling THCA flower. Now, if the letter of the law that neither you nor I passed, enacted, wrote, if that law says that cannabis, sativa L flower, is legal if it's below 0.3% D9 and there's nothing about total THC or the THCA content, then that's what the law allows for. So why is there such controversy? And it begs the question today whether that THCA flower does exactly what you describe, produces the same effect as a marijuana flower. And, you know, I could tell you by way of market research that in Dallas, Texas, fairly recently, there's stores called Moon Taxi, just like it sounds, Moon Taxi. They're all, not all over, but there's several of them in the Dallas metro area. You walk into a Moon Taxi. It catches your eye walking down the street because it's flashy, neon lights. But there's no security. It's not like an average marijuana dispensary with the shaded light, the shaded windows, and you know something that's intended to be a low-key
right, located citizen. In an industrial complex somewhere on some far side of town.
It was on the street of a tourist avenue in Dallas, Texas, which tends to be a conservative place, right? You walk down the street, you walk in, there's colors, there's display items on the wall, gummies, pre-rolls, you name it. So for purposes of this particular market study, I bought two pre-rolls for about $30, $35 all in. It's a lot for two pre-rolls. If it was the marijuana sector, no one would ever pay that unless it was, you know, rolled and keef and you know, coated with diamonds or whatever the case might be. But at the end of the day, the effect is the exact same as you'd expect. It doesn't taste like the hemp flower I was describing a minute ago. It tastes like marijuana flower. And at the end of the day, to your point, that's really in effect what it is. But genetics have allowed us, and more precise testing, to your point, have allowed us to really key in on Delta 9. And the genetics can produce a product that, if brought to harvest, I won't say full maturity, but to harvest at below that 0.3% THC, Delta 9 THC level, it might have 25 or 30 or more percent THCA, which of course converts to D9, so it produces that intoxicating effect. So it presents a conundrum to your point. How do you know what you're buying, what it is, whether it's legal or whether it's not? How does law enforcement know that? How do business owners know it? How do consumers know it? It is important, believe it or not, because we have these absurd laws, but they're laws nonetheless, and we're bound to follow them in some capacity. But how do you distinguish between the two? And who should own that? If, in fact, there's two distinct sectors of the so-called cannabis industry, the marijuana sector and the hemp sector, the sale of flower, if it produces the exact same effect, where does it belong?
Yeah, that's a big question. And I think that's a big question that, you know, obviously business operators are asking themselves. Consumers are certainly asking, but I think that's a big question that we start to see regulators asking too. Actually, I saw, you know, pretty topical for this conversation. I think it was Minnesota announced that there was going to be some task force of both cannabis marijuana regulators and law enforcement that were going to get together and discuss the possible introduction of intoxicating hemp flowers into the marketplace, right? And kind of realizing that, or as these regulators and enforcement agencies start to smarten up and recognize that, okay, this is exactly the same product that we're actually enforcing and regulating over here in this complex regulatory system, I think they're going to start quickly acting to either pass, you know, emergency rules or other kind of quick policy updates to allow or restrict, you know, the sale of these products within licensed marijuana dispensaries. I think it's interesting kind of looking at other states that don't have any sort of marijuana system either. I think it's going to force consideration of a marijuana regulatory framework, which is good. But I wonder about the impact on the consumer, right? Because you mentioned law enforcement. This is something I discussed on our last episode with Thomas Howard. And that is, you know, kind of these two testing assays, right? There's two different tests that people use for detecting cannabinoids. And the test that law enforcement uses by default automatically converts your THCA into THC. So your average Joe on the street that's buying THCA flower that he believes is legal online, he's getting pulled over by the cops. The cops are going to arrest him for having marijuana on him. And if he happens to have smoked that, actually, regardless, I mean, if they use the gas chromatography test, it'll convert that the THCA into D9. If he happens to have been consuming it and smoking it, then certainly it is marijuana, right? And so I think it's unfortunate, but we almost have to wait and see kind of what, you know, some of our talented colleagues on the criminal defense side might do when it comes to one of these cases where someone is seized with, or does someone's arrested with, or pulled over, whatever it is, stopped by cops with a bunch of THCA flower, and to see what the argument is in court, whether or not there is some sort of, you know, chain of custody tracing for that flower all the way back to a hemp farm, or if it's really going to be, I don't know, the law's going to come down and say, actually, no, you know, you possess marijuana here. So I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of opportunity right now for business operators in the THCA space because consumers so clearly want access to cannabis, which I think is just, you know, further ammo and, I don't know, evidence, I guess, that more states need to seriously consider having, you know, some form of marijuana regulation in place. But I think it's something that we also see really closely tied to the new version of the Farm Bill, right? Something that we were discussing before we hit record today was, okay, how does the new Farm Bill maybe start to look at this? Because at the federal level right now, hemp flowers are agricultural commodities. You know, it's part of the hemp plant. It's still controlled kind of by that USDA framework, which, by the way, is the same framework that does allow it to exist. There's no doubt. There's the, you know, the 30-day in advance testing standards that allow people to, you know, pre-test their plants before harvest. We all know that in the last 30 days of a plant's growth is where most of the cannabinoid concentration and conversion occurs. So, you know, there's no doubt that the current regulatory framework is kind of what birthed this opportunity. But I wonder, you know, maybe if we see in the new Farm Bill, if that ever comes down the pipeline, if we do see some sort of, you know, change to truly a total THC standard, or maybe even a definition of THC that includes other isomers of THC like Delta 8, like Delta 10. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways to skin this cat, so to speak. You know, this whole topic just makes me think about, obviously, I and we as a collective, we've been fairly outspoken about, you know, the fact that the hemp industry is legal and that it is a conduit towards legalization, even though many haven't sort of looked up to see that properly. The place that is somewhat uncomfortable for me when I talk about hemp is this THCA flower concept. Because it is the place where it is, as you point out, without high-tech testing, quote-unquote high-tech, when you talk about law enforcement in particular, you're sort of looking at one thing and saying it is something, but it might not be that exact thing. It could be something else, which, going back to the source, if it's an extract in a beverage or an edible or the like, then that ambiguity is gone.
Right. It's no longer under the purview of USDA regulations.
Right. So at the end of the day, which sector of the cannabis industry owns these things? I mean, I'm comfortable saying any 2, 5, 10 milligram beverage, food, gummy, that product, that's low dose, believe it or not.
Yeah, the social dose social concepts.
That should be hemp derived because it's federally legal.
Yep.
It's an ingredient. But when you talk about the difference between what the dispensary system or the marijuana sector sells, this seems to be within its purview.
Yeah.
Because it's not low dose, particularly when you convert high levels of THCA. I mean, that is the place where, frankly, the dispensary system or the marijuana sector needs to recognize that it owns, and it only owns this space, that space being flower, high THC concentrates, and frankly, the medical side of the cannabis industry for over-the-counter medical applications. So, you know, going to your point, this is the place that just feels uncomfortable for me, that hemp producers are selling flower that confuses law enforcement, that puts a consumer at risk for possession, and really creates a challenge of which sector of the industry should own it. So it is a murky area. But to your point also about testing standards, if I don't have adequate testing, or if my testing isn't reflective of what's actually in that package or that box or that can or that bottle or that bag or that pre-roll, then I haven't done my job. And many of the, as a seller, as a retailer, many legal theorists out there. You ever watch that show Ancient Aliens? They always say ancient alien theorists, or, you know,
ancient aliens.
Many legal theorists would suggest that you can simply look at the date of testing of the hemp plant, which, as you point out, is sometimes 30, 40, maybe even longer before the harvest date, which ignores the fact that THCA and THC content are going to, Delta 9 THC content are going to increase substantially before harvest. So I think it's incumbent on the industry to recognize that you should, regardless of that date of testing required by the state, it's your legal burden to harvest a plant that is below 0.3% D9, not 45 days before harvest, but at harvest. It's also occurs to me that it's your legal burden to have a testing assay that's accurate for what you put in the pre-roll, what you put in the jar or the bag, that shows the exact same thing, that the D9 standard is below 0.3%. And yes, there's some external factors like exposure to light, sun, heat, things like this, that could convert those in packaging. But those things could also be treated very delicately as well and avoided.
Well, and if you're not dealing with a product like THCA flower, those things are less of a concern. You're not concerned about your cannabis beverage all of a sudden converting to above 0.3% Delta 9 THC, because the THC that you're infusing that beverage with most likely already is decarboxylated. It's activated D9 because that's what works. So, you know, the beverage manufacturers out there that are putting out products that sit, that are under 0.3% Delta 9 THC, they have no need to they have no, you know, reason to be concerned about that all of a sudden spiking. Whereas certainly the flower vendors do, you know, that should be a valid concern. That should be an extreme concern. Because that could happen while it's still in your possession. You know, it could happen at your store. It could happen in transport.
And that's your burden as the retailer, right, and the possessor of the product, particularly when you sell it, representing it as something else. The other thing I would note is this notion that somehow you can take a marijuana derivative, to the point about the source rule, and dilute it down to below 0.3% and then call it a hemp product. That doesn't work. Pass muster. That doesn't stand reason under any theory that I can come up with, because it has to start from a lawful source to begin with. The source rule never went away. The source rule doesn't go away.
Yeah.
So how at the end of the day do you fix this? How do you address it? You're never going to make everybody happy. You're not pizza. But if...
I don't know. Do you want pineapples on your pizza? I don't.
Exactly right. So at the end of the day, actually, the Hawaiian pineapples are fantastic.
Maybe specifically Hawaiian ones. Yeah, yeah.
So
at the version we get in Denver is not great.
How do you, because they come out of a can.
Right.
How do you fix, we're going to do an episode on pineapples on pizza.
Perfect.
How do you fix this problem, though? I think you fix this problem if the farm bill is relevant in addressing this problem somewhere. I think that, you know, I've called this a politicized issue, ours versus D's, because of the red state weed concept and the fact that, you know, dispensary system, marijuana sector tends to operate in blue states primarily or purple states, whereas the red states tend to have more hemp derived products and outlets. But I think that one thing you can agree on that politicians can reach across the aisle and agree on is they probably don't want that flower being sold as hemp if it produces the same effect. And even in a red state, they'd probably would want that flower either not sold, prohibited like marijuana, because we don't have, because remember, there's stigma to marijuana. There's not stigma to hemp. You'd probably want that sold in a regulated area like a dispensary or not sold at all. Whereas the other compounds that are lower dose in beverages, foods, and the like, those don't carry that stigma, and it doesn't create this political divide. So what can the farm bill do there? The farm bill could raise the THC percentage that's permitted in the definition of a hemp plant, and it could insist on a total THC standard. And if it did so, then you could still maintain these 2, 4, 10, up to 10 milligram beverages, gummies, foods, and the like, low-dose THC derived from federally legal hemp, and then putting that line in the sand for high-dose cannabis products, period, that they belong in either the closed-loop marijuana sector dispensary system, or they're prohibited in certain states that don't allow dispensaries.
Yeah,
I don't want to roll things back, but that seems to be the only viable solution here.
And I think the fortunate thing right now with the lack of federal oversight regulations is that we do have a little bit of a petri dish going on. It's the great American experiment, right? We've got each state is kind of taking its own little approach on how to address certainly intoxicating hemp-derived products, but some states are also taking a close look at THCA, right? And some states have imposed a total THC standard on finished goods, and they do include smokable, inhalable hemp products as finished goods. It's no longer this agricultural commodity, you know, maybe it's like an apple, it's harvested from a plant, but then it's a finished good. I don't know. It's like, no, they define that clearly. Other states like Connecticut have done exactly what you said, and they've created a standard where certain hemp products, based on their, you know, cannabinoid concentrations, do then rise to the level of marijuana products, and they essentially become the same as a marijuana product and must be subject to the same regulations and framework as those products. So I think it's nice that we have kind of these different little areas that we can look at and see what's successful and what's not. I do think that some change to total THC is likely to happen. I think standardization is probably the answer here, like most things in the cannabis space, right? Whether or not it's standardizing what THC is, whether it's standardizing what total THC is, whether or not it's standardizing what tests to use specific to all products. I think, you know, those are things that we can look to regulators and policymakers to maybe establish and implement to, you know, kind of make it a little bit less of a patchwork of, you know, state by state regulation and enforcement, and something a little bit more tenable across the nation. Cause I think that's, you know, one of the things that keeps us busy right now, in the law firm context, fortunately for us, cause there is a lot of confusion and kind of difference out there. But I do think from a business perspective, it's just untenable. So I think folks that sell THCA flower, I think folks that sell other IHD products are certainly looking for clarification and some standardization. So,
again, I know we're coming to the end of this episode, but I would say that if folks are looking to get into the THCA space right now, They're probably a little bit too late. I've seen anecdotally on my own social media circles that people are preparing their brand of THCA flower and putting it out there. And I think that that market might be oversaturated right now. At a minimum, you have created a product just like the early days of the marijuana sector, the dispensary system, where you had the race to the bottom, as you described it, right? A pound of flower went from X to, you know, a third of X, sometimes, you know, within a month because of oversaturation in the marketplace. So the retailers will continue to make out. I don't know if they'll be able to charge $35 for two pre-rolls anymore, but it doesn't matter because that margin's probably going to be built in because they're going to get the flower for a lower cost and a lower cost and a lower cost because of the saturation in the marketplace. And, you know, it also begs the question of which, can you prohibit, you can prohibit the sale of or restrict the sale of like beverages and finished goods, things that go through a manufacturing or production process and ultimately are packaged. But can you limit, restrict, or prohibit the transfer of what is in effect an agricultural commodity, a flower, basically? If my flower is legal in my field, how are you going to tell me that I can't sell it from Bob to Xavier? And what if Xavier chooses to smoke it?
Right.
Or chooses to give it or sell it to his friends to smoke it? Not in a widespread commercial manner. Maybe that widespread commercial manner might be prohibited, but it's still the THCA flower concept. So the point being is it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And even with a federal fix, that's not going to eliminate anything. And I think it's nearly impossible to control the flow of, you know, an agricultural commodity, biomass that's legally grown under federal law for a purpose that is using it in its natural state. I just don't know how you control or gatekeep that.
Yeah.
So bottom line, it's here to stay. So get comfortable with it. And even with a farm bill fix, it doesn't make it go away. And that's the bottom line for all of this stuff. Whether you're a regulator, you're a business owner, you're an investor, you're a hardened marijuana sector veteran, none of this stuff is going away. It's not. Not by legislation, not by law enforcement. And even if those things change, you can't put, what do they say, the toothpaste back in the tube.
Right.
You ever try to do that?
The train's left the station.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it's true. It doesn't work. And I think that's probably a good message to end on, right, is that at the end of the day, this has happened and the entrepreneur has gone out and taken advantage of this opportunity. And I think, you know, a theme on our show certainly over the last few months has been, all right, I think the marijuana sector and generally the cannabis industry needs to look at the hemp side and say, oh, this is an opportunity for us to make meaningful change at the federal level in these states that don't have existing marijuana frameworks, because those states have been, you know, kind of quietly allowed to continue doing what they're doing as long as they're not making, you know, too much of a hubbub. Whereas now we have this national, you know, kind of industry. We've got people all over the place purchasing these products. And all of a sudden, I think politicians and regulators are going to have to look at it and do something about it. So I do think that, you know, this starts to, or continues, I think, to force the issue. And I think generally it's a positive direction for everything. But, you know, details aside that we discussed today. I think that was a great episode and I appreciate the discussion, Bob.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say, and this sets a table for something for us to talk about in the future, it's this notion. I was talking to some investors this morning and the question was, would you allow your group to invest in a marijuana business, even in a brand new state that has a high population, for example, like New Jersey? He says, no, I would not allow them to do that. Because it's too single-purposed, it's not taking advantage of the other opportunity. So I said, "What's the other opportunity?" He says, "Of course, you know, the hemp derivatives, which include, again, let's, when we talk about IHCs, we're not just talking about Delta 8, we're talking about Delta 9. That's what we're talking about during this episode. Would you invest in that?" No, I wouldn't allow them to invest in that either. So what are you saying here, investor? What is your point? My point is, I want a company that's a brand or a supply chain participant that can supply both. I want people that look at the plant for its compounds as ingredients in other things. And sometimes those compounds and ingredients will come from a marijuana plant. Sometimes they'll come from a hemp plant. And those plants might be indistinguishable except for high-tech testing, as you described. But at the end of the day, that's the company I want to invest in. The company that's a brand that's going to build its brand, leveraging the laws that are available to them in multiple places around the country. And by the way, that spurs growth around the world. So if you pick a box, the investors don't want you.
Yep.
But if you play on all sides and realize that you're merely a formulator with a brand supplying ingredients, you might have a chance.
You might have a chance. And that's the future of the industry right there. Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.